Voices Radio Network.
Franco is pretty smart, but Franco is a child. And when it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
Hey, hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to Advices Radio. I'm your host, Scott McNally, and you are listening to episode number 73. Today, we have with us IFBB Pro Ian Valliere. From the Great North, he's coming to us from Canada. He just won the Big Man Weekend out in Spain, and he is on his way to the Olympia. We are going to cover everything. We're going to talk about what it took to prepare and travel and compete out in Spain. We are going to talk about what his plans are now, getting ready for the Olympia in just several weeks. We're going to talk about being a competitive bodybuilder at the pro level, yet still maintaining a happy, healthy relationship to his soon-to-be wife, Melissa Bumstead. And we're even going to ask him how he fits into airline seats. So stay tuned for that and a whole lot more from Ian. Also, we have IFBB Pro Haley Delph and her husband, Ryan. These guys are a couple friends of mine, and I've just been itching to bring them on. So we're going to talk to Haley about the size that she has gained moving up from figure to the women's physique division. We're going to ask Ryan how he handles living with a competitor while she's suffering and dieting down to very low body fat. And we're going to get perspective from both of them on the looks that Haley gets from people on the streets. Not every day that you see a jacked female walking around town. Of course, all of this is just scratching the surface, guys. So stay tuned and thank you for listening to another episode of Advices Radio. Hope that you are getting all of your meals in. Hope that you are training hard. Hope that this show is making your workday go by just a little faster, making your cardio go by just a little smoother, or making your commute just a little more tolerable. All right, guys, let's get to it. Welcome back to Advices Radio. I'm Scott McNally, and with me today is IFBB Pro, Ian Valliere. Ian, thank you for being with me, man. I appreciate it.
No, thanks for having me, Scott. Glad to be here.
Man, first of all, I want to say I am a conditioning fan, and for that reason, I love your physique. And not only do you get the conditioning, man, but you've got mass, too. You've coupled the two. I think it looks really cool.
Yeah, I mean, it was a big... Conditioning has always been a strong point for me. I wouldn't say I have an easy time getting in shape, but it's always been something that I've excelled in. And you know, the last couple of years, I've really focused to pack on that mass to match it. You know, so you know, I'm definitely happy with how things went so far this season. So,
do you feel? And I'm getting into some deeper bodybuilding nerd questions here right out the gate. But do you feel that it's harder to maintain muscle the bigger that you get and still get the conditioning that you're known for?
Yeah, definitely. It's, you definitely deflate a lot quicker. You know, obviously the more tissue you have, the more, glycogen demand you have. You know, if I start to really lower the calories, I will definitely wither away. So, you know, obtaining that same conditioning while, maintaining the mass is obviously more difficult the bigger you get. But, it's a progress, or a process of just figuring out your body and kind of what you need to do to hold on to both. So,
yeah, that makes sense. So I'm going to back up here now. I just got a little bit too excited talking bodybuilding stuff, but let's talk where you're at right now. So we just had the Big Man Weekend show, and that was in Spain, correct?
Yeah, it was in a town kind of south end of Spain called Benidorm. So it's about an hour and a half drive from, I guess, the next biggest city would be Valencia. So okay. I flew in there and then just drove down to Benidorm.
Nice. I want to ask you all about that because I imagine there's a lot of cool, interesting logistics stuff as far as bodybuilding goes to compete over there. But you managed to win the show. So I wanted to congratulate you on that, man. You looked amazing.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And tell me what was it like? What is it like to be a pro bodybuilder that's going not only across the country, but across the world to compete?
How does that work? How soon, for instance, do you fly out before the show? And, you know, how long is that flight? Are you eating meals on the plane? I want to know the details, the logistics of how this comes together.
It's a good question. So I flew out on the Tuesday night, competed Saturday night. So it was actually live final. So there was no prejudging in the morning, like a typical North American show.
Nice.
We were on stage at 9 PM at night, Saturday, one and done. So that was great. I basically flew in Tuesday night. We did an overnight flight, from Montreal to Frankfurt, Germany, and then Germany into Spain. So I flew, you know, 6 PM overnight, got into Spain in the morning. Well, what was morning in Spain, but it was actually 3 o'clock in the morning for, in Canada time. You know, so that was the first day was a little tough getting adjusted, you know, because I really hadn't slept. And for me, a big time when I really dry out, you know, and I my weight from morning to night ranges quite significantly. So I hadn't really slept. So when I landed, you know, I felt like I looked like a water balloon. You know?
Yeah.
Well, you know, because I hadn't slept and dried out like I generally would overnight. So, you know, what we kind of did to, you know, mitigate that as much as possible was, yeah, keeping the carbs. I mean, it's kind of a bro science thing, but, you know, keeping to like the dry carbs, especially while we were flying. So just like rice cakes, protein and vegetables, mainly I just eat asparagus, but, so we kind of just kept to the dry carbs and, you know, kept them as low as possible, really, especially during flight, you know, kept that water nice and high so that we were, you know, continuing to, you know, regulate and flush like that. You know, but that was really it. Once we landed and I got the full day in there, got a workout in, got some cardio and had a good night's sleep, I kind of, you know, regulated back to that. But I mean, the first day when I landed, I was 15 pounds heavier than when I had left. And I dropped 15 pounds overnight the first night I had a proper sleep. So it was a big difference. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That sleep is a huge thing, man. That's a great point. Yeah. I just got back from a trip and I was stuck with a middle seat. I had to hold my arms in the whole flight and I'm thinking to myself, man, I'm like 215, 220 pounds in the off seasons. I'm not a big guy. I'm not the size of you. What's it like flying?
If I'm flying by myself, I generally fork out to upgrade because I don't want to put whoever I'm sitting next to through that. Two, you know, if it's like a 2 hour flight to 3 hour flight to Tampa or Florida or something, whatever, I'll tough it out. Yeah. But somewhere like, you know, Vancouver, or if we're going, you know, longer to Spain, something like that, you know, if I'm by myself, I would upgrade. If not, like this show, I flew with my mom, you know, so we sat together and I kind of paid so that we were just the two of us in a two person aisle.
Oh, right.
Didn't have to squish next to anyone. At least, you know, only my mom has to complain about squeezing next to my big ass. Yeah, you know?
That's funny. So I take it she's really supportive of you then.
Oh, my mom loves bodybuilding. She's been to every single show I've done in my entire life since in 2010. She's been to, no matter if it's Spain or I won my pro card in Mexico or Vancouver Pro or, you know, wherever the show may be, you know, she's never missed one contest. This was, you know, this was keeping her perfect record by coming to Spain. So, and she keeps up to date with the bodybuilders. You know, she follows them all on Instagram. I mean, honestly, she follows bodybuilding more closely than I do. You know, I'd be talking to her one day and she's like, oh, did you see this guy did this or won the show? Or, you know, I'm like, no, I had no idea. So she keeps up to date with it and she loves it. I mean, it's pretty cool, actually. You know, I really, you know, appreciate her support and it's made the whole process a lot more enjoyable, definitely. So
hell yeah, man. It's awesome to have that support. I hear so many stories of people who say like their parents don't understand and they get in arguments at Thanksgiving dinner because they're dieting, you know, stuff like that. So that's awesome, man.
She's very accommodating and, you know, especially, you know, having her around for shows, you know, she always tries to make, you know, things as easy as possible for me. If I, you know, if I need some more food or, you know, if I'm tired and she, you know, help cook and stuff like that. So she's always very accommodating. It definitely helps out. You know, my dad is a little more old school. He's definitely got into it more, the longer I've been bodybuilding. But when I first started, you know, my dad's older, he's in his 70s, you know?
Okay.
So he was, my mom's 15 years younger. My dad, she's kind of a different generation. You know, and she works out herself and she's kind of into that world. You know, my dad, it took him a little longer to kind of, you know, get into the understanding of it and, you know, what the heck are you doing kind of thing and what are you putting yourself through kind of thing. But, you know, he, as I've got more into it, he's definitely, you know, understood my passion, my love for it. And it's definitely made him a lot more supportive. And you know, he keeps up to date with it too. I mean, even my wife, Melissa, is in Tampa this weekend, and he was texting her asking, you know, where can I get updates for the show? And, you know, he likes to keep up to date with it now as well. So
that's awesome. And good for him landing a wife that was 15 years younger than him, huh?
So obviously it didn't work out for him, but but yeah, I mean, at the time, for sure, yeah.
right on. So, you know, you win this show. That gives you the qualification for the Olympia. Are you going to take that qualification, or are you going to go to Vegas?
Oh, I'm not, absolutely, I'll be there, yeah.
You said that like there's no question. It's like, that's not even something to ask.
I would miss it for the world. I mean, this is the thing we all, you know, I speak for myself, but most pro bodybuilders, I mean, the goal is to make it to the Olympia, right? And, you know, that's the big stage, you know. So, and it's obviously, since I started competing, that's been a huge bucket list kind of life goal for me. So, you know, I wouldn't miss the opportunity, you know, for anything.
Absolutely, man. I can hear your love for the sport, you know, just in the way you're speaking. What's the game plan then between now and then? How long do we have? It's August now when we're recording this. So
between shows, it was basically exactly 8 weeks. Okay. Approaching 6 weeks, I guess, tomorrow, because the pre-judging's on the Friday. So we'd be six weeks tomorrow. So game plan, a little different than, you know, the other shows that I did this year. So, you know, at the beginning of the year, I did Indianapolis in March. Then I had about 13 weeks, so a pretty long layover between that and Vancouver Pro. So there, you know, we knew we needed to improve the conditioning between shows. We kind of tried to play the size game just for experimental purposes, you know, trying different carb ups, stuff like that, which it did work well in Indianapolis.
Sure, but you got fourth place, correct?
I did come fourth, yeah.
And that was a great lineup, man, so it's nothing to complain about.
You know, and was my conditioning subpar for me? Yes, but I was, you know, 30 pounds heavier than the last time I'd competed with respectable conditioning in that lineup. If it had been a lineup like Vancouver or something, I probably wouldn't have done well, you know, as well as I did in Vancouver. I came fourth there as well. But that lineup, I mean, everyone down to 10th place was peeled out of their minds, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, Vancouver, we kind of knew the lineup and knew what we could get away with. And we tried to play the size fullness game. And previous years, I'd been kind of one of the smaller guys. I had a lot of new tissue this year. So we wanted to kind of play with, you know, a lot more food, you know, keeping the water in a little later, just some different things that we hadn't tried, you know, in the past. So after that show, we basically went right back on diet and pushed to get the conditioning where we wanted it before we started to introduce some more food. Okay. So instead of kind of hitting the rebound, trying to grow a bit, because I knew I didn't need to be any bigger or fuller. So we kind of came down after that. So I was about 251 on stage in Indianapolis. We came down to like low to mid 240s before we really started to introduce some more food to, you know, kind of maintain that fullness. So we kind of pushed the conditioning before we kind of came back up into the show. So this time, because my conditioning is where it needs to be, and I have been dieting a long time, we kind of saw this as a good opportunity to, you know, kind of utilize that, you know, long period of time I've been dieting, hit the rebound a little bit, you know, capitalize on some growth, you know, get my strength back up, get my, you know, glycogen levels back up, get my intensity back in the gym up. So we kind of crank the food up a lot. So I'm maybe 15 pounds over stage weight now, maybe 18 pounds, but conditioning still good. I mean, like, I still have good lines in my glutes, so we're not getting like far gone here, because the time isn't, you know, it's not 20 weeks between shows. And then once, you know, we figure we're at a respectable spot and capitalize on as much as we can, then we'll start to come back down into the Olympia. So probably week to 2 weeks, then we'll start to come back down again.
Okay. Yeah. Cause it's not, it's interesting because it's not a lot of time, you know, you don't have, you know, a ton of time. You can't make like big changes. You could get more conditioned or try to hold what you got, but it's interesting to hear what you're going to do.
Yeah. I mean, and that's kind of what we did in between Vancouver or Indianapolis, between Vancouver and Spain, because it was only 2 weeks. So there, really, what we did is just kind of, you know, tried to, you know, keep the conditioning where it was, you know, maybe improve it a slightly, and then we just tried something different for our peak week protocol, just for experimental purposes as well, because we had the opportunity. So yeah, this time though, because I have been dieting a long time, we didn't want to just keep, you know, I've been dieting since January, really, because I did March, so it's, you know, been almost, what, 8-9 months I've been, you know, prepping straight. So we didn't want to just keep running me down into that. So we needed to kind of get the food back up, you know, get my strength back up in the gym, you know, and still, like I said, maintaining reasonable conditioning. And then we'll kind of come back down into it. So we didn't want to just wither me away, you know, even more into the Olympia.
Yeah. It sounds like that would be, you'd end up probably being more stressed. You know, your body would probably start looking tired versus now you can, you already got the conditioning and it sounds like if you're going to start bringing it down in a couple of weeks, you're just going to pretty much coast. It sounds like it'll be a really nice experience.
Exactly. So what we're really trying to do is get the fullness and conditioning back that we had in Indianapolis, but maintaining or, you know, bringing that same conditioning that we had for like the Vancouver, the Spain. So trying to be in that, you know, 250 range, you know, with that good fullness, but bring that hard condition that I had in like the, you know, low to mid 240s for Spain or Vancouver. So.
Okay. That's interesting. And I want to note too, for the listeners out there, guys, you know, when we're talking about Ian's physique, he's a big dude. So, you know, 15, 20 pounds, that's not a lot, you know, for 15, 20 pounds on a guy that's 170, that's a whole other scenario, but yeah. You can move that in a matter of days, I'm sure.
Oh yeah. No, I mean like it's not like I went off diet after the show and this is like a bunch of water that, you know, like this was, you know, more glycogen recompensation, stuff like that. Just, you know, getting more calories in through good sources, you know, fats, carbohydrates, and just kind of, you know, slowly increasing as we've gone. You know, introducing back in some intra workout and, you know, peri workout, you know, carbs and stuff like that as well, just to bring a little more fullness and like I said, energy and intensity in the training. So that's really all we've done.
Okay. Now I know you do some coaching and you help others. Do you have somebody that's helping you?
Yeah, I work with Matt Jansen, if you're familiar with him. So he's an American. He's from, where is he from? I'm from Knoxville, Tennessee.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah, we've had Matt on the shows before, so I thought it was Matt. I didn't want to just shoot from the hip, so I figured it'd be easier to ask.
Yeah, I've worked with Matt since late 2015, early 2016. So it really just started as you know, a partnership just for training. And at the time, I was actually working with Dennis James for my prep, who I worked with for my rookie season in 2015.
Okay.
And then, you know, the more I talked to Matt, and you know, we're both kind of, you know, in the same age demographic, and we got along really well. I think, you know, just built a relationship that, you know, kind of had some good respect and, you know, back and forth that I thought could work well. So, you know, we teamed up for both the diet and the training at first. I do most of my own training now, but at the time it was both. And then, you know, we did my first season together in 2016.
All right. You know, speaking of your training, you're known as a guy who trains quite intensely, and I've seen some of your videos. Do you feel that the intensity you bring to the gym has a relationship to the way your muscle looks, the graininess, the hardness you get?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no question in my mind. I mean, I've tried everything under the sun. I mean, I've tried the, you know, Ben Pakulski, you know, slow concentric squeezing stuff. I've done the, you know, lighter weight, higher volume. I've done, you know, I've tried it all, and nothing gives, you know, you can get some good detail and some good shape, but nothing really brings that hard, grainy, dense look, I find, than, you know, just super intense training. And I'm not saying like you got to train like powerlifter 4 to 6 reps or anything. I still do higher volume, but yeah, you know, making sure that, you know, more like a Dorian Yates, Mike Mentzer kind of Ronnie Coleman style, where I really just do one all out set per exercise. And once I've given it 150% on that exercise, I'm moving on.
Okay. Yeah. I like that idea. And I feel like the longer I've trained, the more that's made sense. Like earlier on, I couldn't get that. I just couldn't bring the intensity it took, but now I got to a point where, and I've heard a lot of people say this, it's like, I can only do so many sets before I'm totally shot. How many working sets are you going to end up getting on, say, a leg day, for instance?
Exactly. See, and my opinion, honestly, if you can do 4 sets of 12 of something of the same weight, are you really going to, like, is your intensity really that high?
Yeah.
Because for me, if I do 4 sets of 12 and it's 120% failure, you know, 100% failure, I mean, the next set, there's no way I'm getting ever anywhere close to 12 reps.
God,
no. So, I mean, really what I'll do is just, you know, a couple warm-up sets, prime the muscle, you know, get that kind of neurological connection, you know, work up to what I feel, you know, is a working set, and I'll start going. And if I feel like I could easily bust out you know, more reps than I want, I'll just hang it up at 5-6 reps. I'll increase the weight and I'll kind of, you know, keep going till that one maximal set, and then I'll just kill that set. And whether it's, you know, just a straight set, or I'll involve, you know, rest, pause, drop sets, you know, different intensifiers like that. But you know, it depends what I'm training or where I'm at. But yeah, I, you know, I like to incorporate a lot of things like that as well.
Right. I find that training that way, it takes you, you know, you're only doing a set or two, but it takes you longer to get to that set. How long does it take you to actually work up to that one brutal set?
I mean, it depends what the exercise is, or, you know, what I'm training. Obviously for, you know, bigger body parts like legs or things like that, you know, just for knees, stuff like that, I'll take my time, you know, work up in smaller increments, you know, stuff like that. It depends. I mean, sometimes I'll do 3, 4, 5 sets to get to my maximal set. You know, if it's something like I'm doing, you know, tricep extensions with a rope, I mean, I might just do 2, 3, yeah. You know, it really depends. Or, you know, bicep curls, something like that, shoulders. I don't do a ton as much warm-up sets. Something like chest, because that is something I really have, you know, strive to improve, that I do a lot of warm-up sets. And that's, you know, they'll only be warm-up sets of 4 or 5 reps, but I work up in slow increments just so I really can build that connection with the muscle before I really overload it. So I find if I jump from, you know, 1 plate, 2 plate, 3 plate, 4 plate, you know, I find I'm just pushing with all the wrong muscles. So, you know, I'll go with, you know, smaller increments and then get to that one maximal set.
Okay. Yeah. You know, speaking of training, I wanted to ask you about the injury that you had suffered. Now, this was a couple of years back, I believe. So you turned pro, was it in 2014 in Acapulco?
Yeah, the injury was 2012.
Oh, so that was even before that. I wasn't sure where that fit in. So this was even before that. Now, just the stuff I've seen, you know, I've looked at videos online and stuff, and I've read a couple of, you know, interviews that you had done. It sounds like you recovered miraculously from this. But before we get into that, tell me and tell the audience what happened.
Sure. So, this is 2012. This was really before I was competing seriously. Honestly, at this point, I was not really having any aspirations to compete again, to be honest.
Really?
I had competed as a junior in Canada. I won the Canadian Junior Nationals in 2011. And then after I'd done that, you know, I kind of had lost the fire for it. You know, I got pretty sick after that 2011 Nationals, and I was just kind of bummed out. And I was working, stuff like that. And, I just really didn't have any serious aspirations of competing again. It just really was, you know, an afterthought, something in the back of my head, but, you know, not something at the forefront of my mind. So I was working for anyone in Canada will know Popeyes. It's a local supplement chain.
Oh, yeah.
A Canadian-based supplement chain. So I was working at the one here in Ottawa, and we had a booth at a local level one natural bodybuilding show. It was called the National Capital Fit Day. And so we had a booth there, just, you know, a Popeyes booth, sampling product, whatever. And they had a local arm wrestling event. So it was just, you know, an Ottawa regional arm wrestling event, that was going on there, and it was televised on Rogers TV. And the guy that was doing the commentating for it, and I think he was also doing some kind of, you know, charitable event, like, you know, arm wrestle with 100 people in 100 minutes, or I can't remember what it was, but was a 4 or 5 time world champion arm wrestler named Devin Larratt. So who's also from Ottawa. He's a military guy, but he's also one of the, you know, you can YouTube this guy. I mean, he's legitimately one of the best arm wrestlers of all time. So, you know, I didn't have any delusions of grandeur. We'll make this, you know, clear off the right up front here. I didn't think I was going to beat this guy in arm wrestling. Even really challenge him, because I know that arm wrestling is 150% technique. Strength is important, but it's technique is king when it comes to arm wrestling, and I knew that even then. So it was really a girl that was working the booth with us. She wanted to go arm wrestle him and just get like a video and some few pictures, you know, messing around her with two arms against his one arm, just, you know, fun shit like that. So
yeah,
I went over and filmed or took the pictures for her. And then obviously being, you know, a bigger guy, I was probably 230, 240 pounds at the time, in a place like that, you know, at an arm wrestling event, everyone's like, ah, come on, give him a go.
Of course.
Because they don't know. They think I could beat the guy. Like, I know I can't, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm like, no, it's all good. Like, blah, blah, blah. And eventually the peer pressure got to me. So I was like, fuck it, I'll do it.
Well, and you were what? You must have been like 21 at the time then?
Yeah, 2012. Yeah, I would have been 21. Yeah.
So you're a young guy. You know, you got a bunch of people around you saying, "Hey, do it, do it, do it." You know, you okay? I'll do it. Right.
I got the cute demo girl from Popeyes. Yeah. And it coaxed me into it.
You didn't have a chance.
So yeah, I'm like, ah, screw it. I'll do it for fun. You know. So I go up. He gives me some pointers. You know, and then he tells me to give her. So I go on him. He's like, okay. You know, she gives me a couple more pointers. He's like, you're a strong dude now. So I'm gonna pin you. Okay. And he says this as if it's a concrete fact. So I believe this isn't like, we're going to go now. This is like, I'm going to pin you. So be ready.
Right.
So, you know, he kind of goes, he tells me to, you know, wrap my leg around here, put my head here, you know, keep my wrist in, blah, 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 whatever. He's telling me all these things. And then he's like, okay, we're going to go. And so we start to go and it was just like 3, 2, 1. And we didn't go anywhere. It was just the second we both applied pressure, my arm just exploded.
Oh, fuck.
So I had a spiral fracture of my humerus, so like my upper arm, and it just was like gunshot loud, and it kind of just flopped out to the side real funny. And
oh, my God.
I could see in his face. He was like, ah, shit, you know. He kind of grabbed my arm and brought it back in, you know, so I didn't freak out looking at it all, you know, warped out. Brought it back in and kind of held it close to my body. He's like, shit, are you okay? I'm like, that's broken. And he's like, yeah, that's real broken.
Oh, Jesus.
So I was at the expo, so they had to get an ambulance and, you know, paramedics and brought me to the hospital. And this was on a Saturday. They kind of just splinted me up and pumped me full of drugs until they could get a good ortho surgeon to do the surgery, which I got on the Wednesday. So that was a pretty miserable 3-4 days there. Because once the attrition started to set in, you know, and I hadn't – the bone was still really separated. So any kind of movement or structural pressure, it was hitting nerves and all sorts of weird shit, and it felt really nasty, and you know, the inflammation was really bad. So and then I had surgery on the Wednesday. I had day surgery on the Wednesday. So yeah, that kind of went from there.
Wow That's it's a lot more intense when I actually hear the story than just seeing the pictures, which the pictures are intense too. Now how long did this recovery take?
Honestly, like you said, I mean, it was really quick, like 4 weeks. I think I had x-rays and the bone was pretty well fused. And then I told the surgeon, I was like, yo, is it okay if I start doing some light stuff? He's like, well, you're not going to break it. He's like, but, you know, you can start to, because my arm had been in a splint, like they didn't cast it because I had an open wound, right? Like where the staples were. So I'd been in a splint for 4 weeks, so my arm wouldn't even straighten. Like all my tendons and ligaments in my elbow were so locked up, my arm was just stuck at 90 degrees.
Wow.
So it took me about 2 weeks to get my arm straight, and then I had x-rays again at 6 weeks. That bone was like nice and fused and callous, and then I'm like, well, it's not going to break, and my arm's straight, so let's start lifting some weights. I just went back. I mean, like I could curl 10 pounds, 5 pounds. I mean, I was benching, you know, 25 on each side. I mean, like I couldn't do much. But I really feel that, you know, that weight bearing, you know, exercise really, really improved my recovery big time. I mean, I didn't sit around. The second I got x-rays and saw that the bone was healed, you know, after that, I knew I had no muscular damage. It was really just getting back in there, getting some blood in there, getting things moving again. And it really healed quick. So, I mean, I would say I was back to 100% within 3 months.
Wow. That's unbelievable, man.
Yeah.
I would think it would take just 3 months just for the bone to heal or something like that. You know, obviously I don't know, but it just
6 weeks. I got the x-rays and I saw the x-rays with my own eyes and I was like, well, it's not going to break. Cause I mean, especially cause I had a big metal rod and I still have it in there, you know, big,
okay,
you know, plate up the back of my, goes from my elbow up to my shoulder basically. And, you know, 12 or 16 screws. So, I mean, you know, that plus, you know, when a bone breaks and it recalcitrates, you know, calluses like that, I mean, they're even stronger than before. So that plus the plate, I was like, well, what's the worst that can happen here? You know, it's just going to feel crappy. But, you know, I really want to at least start getting things moving, you know, and it helped a lot for sure, you know.
That's also got to be interesting when you go to the airport, having a rod and plates through your arm.
It actually doesn't go off.
Really?
I don't know what they made it of. You know, when you're traveling in the US and they put you through those like ion scanners, you know, where you stand, put your hands over your head, it shows a yellow line on my arm on that. But going through a metal detector, it doesn't go off. No, never.
Do you get, this is like totally off topic now going into the airport stuff. Do you get, with that ion scanner, do you set that off a lot? Cause I find that a lot of
all sorts of weird places.
Yeah.
Help before I even go through it. I'm like, okay, one, I have a metal plate in my arm that's going to go off, and it's probably going to go off in 10 other places, so you might as well just feel me up now.
Right, right.
So, I mean, yeah, I get it all over the place. I mean, and it's random every time. It's not like it's the same spots. Like, I'll get it in my shoulders, my leg. I mean, it's just wherever. I mean, it's, you know, random spots going off all over the place. So,
yeah, I was wondering, I've gotten that too. And I've heard a lot of people say that.
Yeah, I think I've talked to one guy who at the airport who did seem like he kind of knew a bit more about, you know, muscle lifting and how, you know, the ion scanners react with it. And he said that, you know, excess muscle tissue, especially like fluid balance and muscle tissue, will kind of send the readings wacky. So he said it's, yeah, anyone with larger amounts of muscle will generally just set it off in all sorts of weird ways. And there's not really any rhyme or reason. It's just kind of how the ions bang off in the muscles and it sends it false readings. So
interesting.
Yeah.
So you were 21 at that point, and yeah, you had two more years before you actually had turned pro. You said you actually didn't think you were going to compete again, though, at the point that you had broken the arm. You thought at that point you thought you were done. You decided to get back into it, though, I take it.
Yeah. I don't really know what I guess the biggest contributor would be my fiance now, Melissa. We started dating a couple months after my arm. It would have been like September, maybe 2012. And you know, when we started hanging out, I was working out like daily, like I always have, and, you know, eating good meals and stuff, but I wasn't super serious about it. And, you know, I think when we got together, she could kind of tell that there was something like missing for me like that, you know? So, I mean, she was really the one that I think kind of coaxed me back into it. And I was like, nah, I don't want to do it. And she's like, I think you're going to be fucking miserable unless you at least get one more out of, you know, your head, just to, you know, to at least know what could have been. Cause I, you know, I hadn't competed in a long time, and I think she could tell that, you know, I really want to do it, but it wasn't in the front of my mind like I wanted to, but, you know, something just kind of felt like it was missing. I think she could kind of feel that. So she was the one that suggested I do it. And so I did the local show, Ottawa's in 2013, which, I mean, if you look at pictures, that was probably the best I've ever looked to date. I mean, really? Obviously way bigger now, but in terms of my overall package for, you know, what I had at the time, my conditioning was ridiculous. I mean, I've still never been as lean as I was there with that kind of detail. You know, it was just, yeah. So that's kind of where it started there. I did the Canadian provincials in spring of 2014. And then I went to Mexico 2 weeks later, and that won my pro card.
Yeah, that's a cool story. And when you mention your wife, Melissa, now we know her as competitor, Melissa Bumstead, the sister of Chris Bumstead.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your relationship to her and to Chris.
So, yeah, like I said just now, Melissa and I met in, we actually went to high school together. We're the same age. We went to high school together, graduated the same year.
Oh, no kidding.
Very, very different social circles. I mean, like I could have picked her out in a lineup if you said, you know, which one's Melissa. I probably could have told you who she was, but we were very, very different social circles. You know, I was like the guy, like, you know, skipping class to go smoke weed with my friends. And
so basically you're saying we would have hung out. That's what you're telling me.
We would have hung out. smoking cigarettes and being a dumbass. And she was actually going to class, and she was a smart kid, you know?
Right on.
But we were very, very different social circles. But a couple of years after high school, a common friend, girlfriend of hers that was a friend of mine that had been friends of mine since, you know, elementary school. She started living with me. She was, got kicked out of her dad's, or I can't remember what the dynamic was, but she started living with me, and then they were hanging out. We kind of started to hang out. And yeah, one thing led to another. But at this time, she didn't even work out. Like, competing was something she knew nothing about. She thought, like, honestly, she thought my muscles were repulsive.
No kidding. Wow.
Oh yeah. Like, this was something she wouldn't know who Ronnie Coleman was if you put, you know, asked her, kind of thing. Like, she really knew nothing about bodybuilding or competing or, you know, the class, you know, women's class figure, you know, she wouldn't have known the difference between that and bikini and bodybuilding. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, she would go to the gym 2-3 times a week and do like a Good Life body pump class, or, you know, go on the treadmill or to the stair mill, and, you know, or go in the group X room and do some crunches. But I mean, she didn't have an ounce of muscle on her. I mean, she didn't really train or anything like that. Chris was young, obviously, because Chris is 5 years younger than Melissa and I. So I mean, at this time he was in grade 10 or 11. I mean, he was a little kid, you know?
Okay.
So, I mean, obviously, Chris, you know, you can tell by his genetics, even in grade 10, he was a mutant. You know?
No kidding.
Yeah, I mean, he looked like he was a 30-year-old man in high school. You know, when he was a natural and, you know, 17, he looked like, you know, he was one of the teachers, you know, like, he looked like a gym teacher, and all his teachers were hitting on him. You know, I mean, he looked like a 30-year-old man with a beard and, you know, big muscles. You know, he was 215 pounds in grade 11. You know? So, yeah, I mean, this, you know, bodybuilding is in Chris's blood for sure. I mean, would I say Melissa would ever competed if me and her hadn't got together? No. Chris, I think, would still be where he is without, you know, without me coming into their lives. But, yeah, Melissa really, you know, after I did that show in 2013, you know, I think it kind of just like, you know, piqued her interest a little bit, you know. So she started training with me, and she was trained like a bodybuilder. I mean, I was training like I always have, you know, like a real bodybuilder, you know, high intensity training. And she just kind of followed along and did the same things. And, you know, you have a girl that goes from no training to training like a pro bodybuilder. I mean, she grew like a weed, especially when you have Bumstead genetics. You
know? Right, right.
So, I mean, she, like, not even a joke. I mean, she must have put on 30 pounds of muscle in 6 months. Like,
wow. That's insane.
Completely naturally. Like, she must have gone from, you know, 130 pounds, you know, with higher body fat to 160, 170 pounds with lower body fat, you know. Wow. She just exploded with muscle. So I think after that, she was like, okay, I need to tone this down a bit. But, you know, Chris kind of got the idea he wanted to do a competition. So Melissa was like, hey, I'll do it too. And then, yeah, you know, she did a show in, I think, spring of 2014, just a level one show, and won her overall for figure and turned pro the next year. So she did 1, 2, 3, you know, one level one show, one provincial overall, one national overall, three shows in a row.
That's badass, man.
Yeah.
So do you guys ever get a chance to train together now, the three of you?
We train almost together. I mean, most days, really.
Do you really? I didn't know that. Okay.
If I don't train with her, I train with Chris. I mean, you know, I have one other buddy that lives in town that I train with here and there. Or I have a guy that lives at the other end of town named Freddie, Palmer, who's an older guy. I don't train with him, but he trains me. He's kind of like a, you know, that Freak Fitness guy that they have down in, you know, or like a, you know, old Charles Glass kind of guy, you know, you know, just good for cranking the intensity and, you know, yelling at you and, you know, making really push a set to the next level. So, you know, I would go down there a couple times a week, for the last couple of years I've done that. And I mean, that's been really good as well, but yeah, Melissa and I train together, you know, at least 2 to 3 days a week, if not more, for sure. You know, we do cardio together every morning, but yeah. You know, she, you know, as she's got more into training and learned her body more, obviously, you know, what our focuses in terms of training are a little different. But you know, the common things, you know, like training back or legs or things like this, shoulders, we absolutely train together. Yeah. You know, she obviously doesn't train arms or chest like I do.
Yeah.
You know, but the other things, yeah, Jim, absolutely. You know, she trains them like a pro bodybuilder, you know?
That's pretty cool, man. And it says a lot too. I mean, it's cool. I think a lot of people are looking for that in a relationship, somebody that they can enjoy doing the things they love doing with them, you know? So you get to do that every day.
And it's good because, I mean, I always get a lot of people, you know, when I say that Melissa and I train together, I think kind of look at me as if it brings my intensity down, like that the girl or something. But I'll tell you, it's the complete opposite, because I ain't want to look like no punk, you know?
Right, right.
I mean, I train way harder when I train with Melissa than when I train with everybody. Because even though we've been together for 6 years, I mean, I still want to impress her, you know? Like, when we go to the gym, I still want her to think I'm the biggest, freakiest dude. And I still obviously want her to train at her most intense, you know, highest intensity she can. And I think by me kind of setting the precedent, it definitely pushes her as well. So, you know, we got a good kind of back and forth thing, you know, in terms of that. And it works really well. Yeah.
That's cool, man. So tell me, how do you make your living? How do you, cause it sounds like you've got the life, man. You've got a, you know, a beautiful wife that enjoys lifting with you. You've got good friends, good people around you. You're competing on the regular. But what do you do for a living to support all this?
So obviously, first and foremost, especially, you know, this last couple of years, bodybuilding is my primary occupation. I sponsored and work with a company called ANS Performance. They're a Canadian-based company, and they treat me very well. I actually just re-signed for another 3 years with them yesterday.
Awesome.
So that'll be, you know, I just did a 2-year contract with them, so we'll be going on 5 years, you know, by the end of this contract. So, you know, I love working with them. We're a small company, but, you know, it's nice being a, you know, a big fish in a small pond. You know, and we get to work very closely together, and they treat me very well. So, that would be my primary occupation, bodybuilding. And then I guess a couple years ago, if you'd asked me, I would have said coaching. Obviously I wasn't getting paid as much as I am, you know, sponsorship wise for bodybuilding when I wasn't as competitive as I am now. you know, but as I've kind of got more competitive and bodybuilding has been more of a primary focus for me, I've kind of tapered away from the coaching. I still do quite a bit of online coaching. And then I have another guy that works with me as well, that I give some referrals, and then he helps me as well. So yeah, I maybe take anywhere between 20 and 35 clients. I mean, never a ton, and never any that are like all competing at the same time kind of thing. I mean, I've had that happen by accident. Having 15 clients in a show is no fun. Wow. So, yeah. So, I mean, throughout the year, I might work with, you know, 30 to 50 people, but that's really it.
Right on. What would you say, you know, because I think as a coach, I do nutrition for people. I feel like that as a coach, you get a better perspective on, you know, on nutrition as a whole. You get to see how a lot of different people respond. You get to see what a lot of people's downfalls are, and you get to see what a lot of different people's strengths are. What do you think is the biggest setback that people, you know, have in their way? That keeps them from reaching their goals, that keeps them from, you know, doing what you're doing.
This is an easy one. Consistency. That's all it is. I think it's just consistency. People are not consistent. And I get this all the time. And I mean, I'm sure you see it with clients. You get people that want to come to you, work 12 weeks out into a show, and then they go fuck off for an off season, you know, and they come back the next year, you know, do the same prep, wonder why they look the same on stage or why they're the same weight on stage. And I mean, the answer is very cut and dry, right? You know, in my opinion, it's people don't take their off seasons as seriously as they take a contest prep. You know, you can give her 120% in a prep, but if you're not taking your off season as seriously as that, you're never going to progress the way you want to. And I mean, I can use myself as a perfect example of this. I mean, when I was competing, when I turned pro and I had my first year with Matt Janssens, 2016, was the two worst placings I ever had as a pro. I mean, I can't remember, sixth or seventh at Toronto Pro and like eighth or ninth in Vancouver, which was hands down the worst I'd ever placed in two shows. And after those two showings, I was like, okay, you know, I'm peeled out of my mind here and I'm placing in the second call out. Obviously, I just need to be bigger. You know, I was 230, 232, which, you know, there is guys that are very competitive at that weight, but for my structure, I'm a bigger, like I can fill up my frame a lot more than that. So I took between 2016 and all the way till this year, till 2018 off just to grow. And I mean, I jumped from coming, you know, seventh, ninth to qualifying for Olympia. So, I mean, it just shows right there. And, you know, I didn't do any wild or wonderful magic tricks in that 2 years. That was just a consistent 18 months of diet every day, train hard every day, you know, be consistent every day with my, you know, supplementation, nutrition, diet, cardio, everything for 18 months. That's all it was, without being in prep. See, people will do that for prep, but then they don't, like I said, for the off season. And, you know, I put on, you know, 20, 23 pounds, 25 pounds of contest weight without sacrificing any conditioning, you know, when it comes to my Vancouver or Spain look. So, I mean, that's really all it is. It's consistency. People just are not consistent, you know?
Yeah, that's a huge amount of mass to put on, and you're 5'9", right?
Yeah, I'm like literally exactly 5'9". Yeah.
Yeah, that's a ridiculous amount of muscle to have gained. Tell me about what it took. Are you, first of all, let me ask you this before you answer that question. Are you a guy that likes to eat, or are you a guy that would rather just not eat quite as much?
I fucking hate eating, man.
You hate eating. Okay, so that says a lot.
I'll preface that by saying, and it's funny because I had Canadian Bodybuilder, just had a post about this. You know, about dieting versus off season. And the answer really is the grass is always greener, right? When you're prepping, all you wish you were was stuff in your face.
Right.
And when you're in your face, all you wish you were was hunger, you know? You're like, I wish I wasn't eating so much. So, I mean, yeah, okay, the grass is always greener. Right now when I'm prepping, I'm eating more food right now than I actually eat during my off season. I'm starving.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm probably eating 600 grams of carbs right now, and I'm barely maintaining weight. And, you know, I'm only doing 25 minutes cardio a day. And, you know, during the off season, eating this amount of food, I would be like, screw this, you know, like this is, you just don't want to do it. You know, you look at your meals and you're just like, oh shit, do I really got to eat this? Or, you know, you're lethargic all the time. I mean, you know, it's not enjoyable for sure. So, you know, I think I enjoy prepping more because I think I'm a lot more productive in my life. You know, when I'm just slugged down from all that food in the off season, you know, when I'm 280, 290, I feel very unproductive. You know, I'm tired. You know, I feel like I don't get shit done the same. You know, when I'm in prep, I'm very routine oriented. Not that I'm not always, but, you know, even more so, You know, I'm getting up every day. I'm getting up every day at, you know, 7-8 to do my cardio, and I'm, you know, my meals are kind of all in the same order. I train kind of at the same time, you know, and I feel like I'm just a lot more productive in my day, which I feel better doing that for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes total sense to me. I've been asking guys that I talk to a lot, you know, what's the weight you reach before you hit that lethargic period? Where is that for you? 'Cause I know it's all over the place.
I'd say 275. I start to feel pretty bad.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it depends really. I mean, you know, it depends how gradually I get there too.
Mm,
you know?
Okay.
You know, if I was to, you know, all of a sudden right now, just eat like a horse and, you know, fill my face with as much food as I could and get up to 280 by next week. Yeah. I'd probably feel pretty terrible. You know, if I was to slowly ramp up calories and, you know, over the next 2 to 3 months, kind of gain that 12 to 15 pounds, I'd probably feel pretty good. I think the biggest thing too is keeping cardio in, you know, for one, appetite, and two, just, you know, keeping yourself feeling good and healthy and, you know, and everything like that for the off season. I think a lot of guys just cut it completely. Even if you have a high metabolism, like someone like me, I think keeping in a little bit is very important.
Yeah, I totally agree. What's a little bit to you?
Off season, 20 minutes, 4 to 5 days a week. I mean, maybe okay. More. You know, I'll just do, you know, post-workout or fast in the morning, just depending kind of what my schedule is. But yeah, 20 to 25 minutes, like, you know, moderate intensity. I'm not like super like walking 1 mile an hour on the treadmill. I generally do the bike or the recumbent bike or something, you know, level 8 to 10, you know, 80, 90 RPM. So like I'm getting a good sweat, but not killing myself, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. You know, I got to say, you are truly living the dream. You know that? You really are.
I mean, I think so. I mean, I'm very happy with, you know, especially how this things have progressed. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, we all have those moments where it's like, why am I doing this to myself? Like, is this worth it? And, you know, like where I was when I was talking about 2012, 2013, I didn't want to compete. And I was like, why am I doing this to myself? You know, but yeah. Over time, it's one of those things that, you know, when you really just stick it out and, like I said, be consistent, you know, I think that's where it really separates the guys who are successful from the guys that aren't is one that just that mental tenacity of, you know, even when shit ain't going how you want it to, you just get up and still do it every day, you know, because of, you know, you still have that sight of that long-term goal. And I think, you know, if you hold sight of that and push through it, even the days you don't want to train, the days you don't want to eat, you know, I think that's really, you know, where it pays off and it's definitely made it all worth it for sure.
And I guess, you know what it comes down to? You got to have a love, you got to have a passion for it. And maybe, and I've told people too, sometimes it's like, well, if you don't want to do it, if you don't love it, then that's okay too. But if you want to be successful at this, yeah, these are the things that you got to do. So that it makes total sense, man. And you're obviously a person who loves what you're doing. So I think that's really cool.
And I think one thing I get a lot too, and I mean, it's a hard, but silly question in my opinion, is people always ask me like, how do you find the motivation to always do this, especially in the off season, you know, when you're not like super lean and seeing the progress every day? And, you know, and the thing is you don't, I mean, you're motivated every day, right? I mean, there's days just like anybody else, just like, you know, the fat guy down the street that doesn't want to get up and go to the gym. We all have those days. I mean, as much as we love to train and love bodybuilding, there's a good chunk of days that we feel like that. But like I said, I mean, that's really where I think it separates is that you still just get it done. And at the end of the day, I mean, you're doing what you love and you kind of push through it and you reap the benefits, right?
Yeah, right on. Well, listen, why don't you plug your sponsor and anything else that's going on? Let people know where they can reach out if they want to follow along with what you're doing and tell me anything else that's coming up, man, that we should all know about.
Yeah. So, my sponsor, as I mentioned before, is ANS Performance. So you can find them on Instagram at ANS Performance. Facebook, just ANS Performance as well. You can find me on Instagram. I mean, I do some Facebook, but I feel like the world's kind of an Instagram, so I kind of stick more to that. I'm just at IFBBIAN, IAIN. And yeah, things coming up. I mean, just the Olympia now, man, that's really what's on my mind.
Yeah.
Melissa and I are getting married at the end of the year, so November. So that's a big thing for me coming up.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. So
are you guys going anywhere special to do that or?
No, we're getting married here in Ottawa. It's like a fancy wedding venue called Strathmere here just in Ottawa. So, you know, we want to, you know, kind of keep it here so that all our friends and family can attend without the financial obligation of it. Right. So
sure. Sure.
So we're just here in Ottawa in November. So, you know, that's really Olympia and Wedding are the two big things coming up. So it's a jam-packed fall coming up. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's enough. Those are either one of those things is enough. Yeah, really.
Luckily, I didn't have to do any wedding planning, so that's good. Very, you know, territorial with that. She kind of had fun with it and did her whole thing. And I mean, I just kind of sat back and said, okay, cool. You know, so.
Right on.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, for another episode of Advices Radio, I'm Scott McNally with Ian Valliere. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, man. We'll talk to you later.
All right, guys, and welcome back to Advices Radio. Scott McNally here. And up next, we have with us IFBB Pro Haley Delph and her husband, Ryan Delph. These are a couple good friends of mine. Guys, thank you for being with me.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Thanks for having us, Scott.
Absolutely. And I've enjoyed seeing you guys at the bigger national shows this year. I'm looking forward to seeing you both out at the Olympia. What's next for you? Where are you guys heading next?
Well, my next show is going to be the Arnold Amateur.
Oh.
So March 1st. As of right now, that's what I'm shooting for. And then that'll be my second show ever. So it'll be a pretty big stage. But I won my first show, so I'm thinking I want to test myself and see where I stand.
Hell
so,
yeah, man. Hell yeah.
Other than that, Haley's going to be making her pro debut, which is...
Yeah, probably next March sometime. That's what Veej and I are going to shoot for.
Okay, okay. Yeah. I was asking more like where you heading next as far as contests to see. Where, because I've been seeing you guys everywhere. I've been seeing you at Junior Nationals. I've been seeing you everywhere.
Yeah, they kind of keep me in the Midwest.
Okay.
Mostly. So
who's
yeah,
they?
The Olymp? Oh, well, the NPC News, who I do the contracted stuff for. I go with HD Physiques, Joe Bear, who owns that. He hires me. So, yeah, we're going to the Olympia covering that. So I'll be doing some media stuff there.
All right. Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, you guys do a great job at that, too. It's a lot of fun to see you there and to interact with the, you know, all the competitors and stuff. I think you guys do an awesome job. Hey, before we get to my questions, because I have some real questions here, I wanted to ask you, now, Ryan, you were into fighting before you got into bodybuilding, right?
Correct.
No kidding, man. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I wrestled my entire life, starting in kindergarten, and wrestled in high school, you know, and was a state qualifier, state place winner, set records for the high school and stuff. And I was like, man, I really have nothing left to do after high school. I could wrestle in college. But honestly, I was kind of getting burnt out of wrestling. And, you know, that was when the UFC was really taking off there. I graduated in 2007. So around then, you know, that was the hot thing to watch on the weekend. Still is, but that's when it was really taking off. And I was like, man, I kind of want to give that a try.
Yeah.
And started training. And with the good wrestling background, I picked up on jiu-jitsu pretty quick and learned some stand-up. And then when I was 18, right before I started college, I had my first professional fight. It was lower level, not like in the UFC or anything, you know, but like a regional fight card. And I won it, and I was like, man, this is awesome. So I was addicted to that for a few years.
Wow.
Yeah, I ended up having... 11 amateur fights and 6 pro fights. So
nice.
That was a good time.
Nice. And now you're onto bodybuilding along with the wife. Haley, give me a little bit of your background. Now you turned pro just recently. That was last year, right?
Yeah, last year is Junior Nats.
And that was in figure, but you're now moving up to women's physique. Tell me a little bit about, you know, what you've been doing this past year, because you put on a lot of muscle. And I also want to know, guys, if you're a listener of Bodybuilding Nerds, you probably know Haley because we've talked about her over there a bunch. She is a client of VJ's.
Yeah, so we turned pro in figure. I was much smaller than I am now. And really, really, even when I started bodybuilding, the end goal for me was the women's physique look. That's what I really love. And even all my inspiration from the beginning was more so the bigger athletes, the physique athletes, and even bodybuilders. So, you know, I just didn't quite fit into that when I started. So I started in the figure division and just kind of tried to stay consistent. Eventually, I knew that my body was more for physique. So that's where we're headed now. And since turning pro, the Veej and I, we've been, you know, feeding me as much as possible and working my ass off in the gym. And yeah, it's been fun. It's been interesting. This is my first off season, real off season that I've taken. And it's been really cool to see, you know, what I can do and the different challenges and rewards that come with it.
Now, how much scale weight had you gained from, say, what was your stage weight for figure? And then how high did you go up? I know you went up and then you guys started bringing it, dialing it back down a little.
Yeah, so this is kind of crazy when I say it out loud.
I know.
When I turned pro, I was about like 116, 118 on stage.
Okay.
I'm 5'2". So then today, I guess I got up, the highest point I was 170.
Okay.
And that was the biggest I've ever been in my life. I never thought in a million years I would see 170 on the scale, but it happened.
Yeah.
And then today I weighed in at 151, and I was that yesterday, and Veej gave me a big old cheat meal. So that's where we're at.
Nice. What'd you eat for the cheat meal?
Well, McDonald's, of course.
Oh, nice. Yeah, McDonald's sets in your muscle nice, I'm telling you.
It does.
I just had some myself. That's what I ate yesterday. And in the gym today, I felt like I looked like a million bucks.
It's a secret. It is. Some people are like, what the hell? How can you do that? I'm like, don't knock it till you try it.
It doesn't settle with everyone's stomach, though. That's the only thing I've noticed, you know, working with other people.
It's like your gut flora has to be used to it, you know, for real.
Right.
Well, Ryan has probably eaten thousands of double cheeseburgers in his lifetime.
Easily.
It's kind of gross.
Absolutely.
Oh, man. So, Ryan, you know, I mean, you're obviously serious about competing. You're obviously serious about bodybuilding. You know, with the wife at moving up to this level, moving up not only to the pro level, but moving up a division and going through the work that it takes to put on the muscle she's going to need. You know, tell me a little bit, what's it like being in a relationship with somebody who is a focused competitor on that level?
Mm-hmm. It's unreal. I love it. You know, this is bodybuilding, training in the gym. That's kind of what we do together. That's our fun.
Nice.
You know, so it helps. That definitely helps that's what we do. But just being able to train together, push each other, it's awesome. And I enjoy traveling to shows when Haley's competing and being the IFBB bag bitch, as I've coined myself. I'm basically the bag bitch and hype man.
Yeah, you're the hype man too, huh?
Yeah.
Champ is coming.
Yeah.
He's a really good hype man.
Yeah, no, I love it. But there are times, you know, when deep in prep where things can get hostile, you know? Like, Haley never really goes crazy on me. But, you know, you need to know when to hold your tongue. And, like, this woman is starving right now.
Yeah.
there's pros and cons with it, but anybody, you know, in bodybuilding that's got a significant other that does it as well should know that.
Sure.
Ryan's being really nice with that answer.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, we do. We really enjoy training together and meal prepping together. And it's that it pushes us, you know, because it's good to be in the same household with somebody that loves it just as much as you. But it does get a little hostile. You know, we've never really been deep in prep at the same time. But I know, especially like when I was starting out and I didn't know what to expect with cutting for a show, it did get really rough. And you have to, I had to learn how to check my emotions and still keep my relationship first, even when I am starving. But he, I mean, he's had to like spot me on the stair mill and carry my bags all the time and, you know, set multiple alarms for me in the morning at 4 a.m. because I might be too tired and sleep through them. So it's a team effort, and that's not easy, but you know, I think because we both love it, it does work out.
So, you know, when you guys talk about, and like you said, things never get really hostile, but I know what it's like when you are under the pressure of being on a, you know, difficult diet, and it's hard just to muster up the energy to have a conversation. Talk to me a little bit, Haley, about, you know, what's going through your head when you're in that place, yet you know you still have to interact with your significant other.
Yeah. Well, my diet is hard, really hard. Veej, it's not Veej, it's my body that needs it. But he's even said before, like, I'm really good at suffering. And that's a learned skill, I think, because, yeah, it's not easy. I get down no carbs for so long.
Yeah.
But really, and I think about, it's not just the end goal. You know, it's if you don't enjoy the terrible part of the process and the really great part of the process, then what's the point to me? So, you know, there's always, my dad always used to say, you know, like, there's always somebody better. So I look at it as, you know, somebody is suffering worse than me right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can do this, and it's all that's what it is. You know, I really like to push myself to the next limit. So yeah, there's always more you can do.
Yeah, no, I look at things the same way. Do you guys, let me ask you this. Do you plan for things to get tough? Say, you know, things are going to be tough here for the next 6 weeks and it's going to suck, but after that, we're going to do this vacation, or we're going to, do you guys plan anything for after the shows? Because I feel like for some people, they do that as a way of almost like, it's not really making up for the time that you had to really, you know, endure this thing together, but it gives you both something to look forward to. Do you guys ever do something like that?
Kind of. When Haley did USA's a couple of years ago, shortly after that, you know, we planned to take a motorcycle trip out to the East Coast and stopped through Knoxville, Tennessee, and visited Arsenal Strength, and which Jamie and Andrew, the CEOs, are our friends, and we went to Gatlinburg, and
I love Gatlinburg.
Yeah, you know, so we plan little getaways, I guess, but
it's hard to. Our work schedules kind of interfere with that too. The summertime, Ryan's a landscaper, so there's not really time around that, and then training always comes first. But it's you know, like, we saw you at Junior Nats and all the other shows. Those are, we like to take small getaways.
yeah. And that's cool. I don't even mean like vacations, but you know, planning more dinners out, stuff like that. You know, I think that those things are important, you know, to kind of make up for that time almost. Let me ask you something, Ryan. Seeing Haley make this transformation, and really making this exceptionally huge transformation in the last year alone, when you guys are out in public, do you see people treating her differently as a woman with a lot of muscle?
Absolutely. Yeah? Most of the time. yeah. For instance, like, we were just at the county fair last night. You know, just walking around, say, the fair or the mall or farmer's market, wherever you know, you catch the people taking second, third, fourth looks. And sometimes they're looks of, wow, holy crap, that chick's jacked, you know, like in a good way.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's a face of disgust, like, oh, you know. But you catch that. I have people come up to me, like, most of my friends know what we're doing, what we're into here, and they're all supportive, but you know, I might see somebody at the bar or whatever, and they're like, hey, your wife's Haley Delph, right? I'm like, yeah. And they're like, so you like how she looks? I'm like, well, yeah, absolutely. They're like, well, I bet she beats you up at home, huh? You know, stuff like that, which is kind of, to us, it's ridiculous, but you just laugh it off. And Yeah. You come to terms with it, but yes, Haley, definitely being a woman with a lot of muscle mass gets looked at and treated different sometimes.
And I assume, Haley, this is something you notice too in your personal life, walking around town.
Oh yeah, I try not to for the most part.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just something, like Ryan said, you kind of laugh it off. It kind of depends on my mood, I guess, how I react to it or whether I notice it or not. Because I mean, I do this for a reason. I love the way that I look, and this is what I want my body to look like. Because I love bodybuilding and I enjoy it. But I do know that society is not really used to it. So, you know, I act like. I go into situations thinking that I'm just normal and that I look normal. Yeah. And then I'm sometimes surprised when people are like shocked, you know, because I don't think I'm that huge, but I guess, you know, relatively to lots of people in Iowa, I guess I'm a little bit bigger. But yeah, I do get a lot of weird looks. Even like little kids are the best because they don't look away.
Yeah.
You know, they'll like point and be like, what is that?
can you think of a particular instance that was exceptionally weird?
Yeah. So Ryan and I, one time we were out on our motorcycle, we were in like normal clothes. I think I had a tank on, but we were having dinner at this Mexican restaurant in town and just minding our own business, eating chips and salsa. And I caught this woman, you know, at a table next to us. She was taking pictures of me, like on her Snapchat and sending them to people. And me, Ryan was like, yeah, don't worry about it. But it kind of pissed me off. So,
yeah, yeah.
You know, and she was pretty drunk. So that didn't make it any better. But I was like, hey, you know, that's not cool, man. I see that you're taking pictures of me. So she comes over to our table. Wasted, sits down, she starts like hugging me and feeling my arms. She's like, no, I just think you look, you're like so big. And I'm like, man, you're not making it better.
Right, right.
So I was like, well, you know, I don't appreciate it. You know, if you want a picture, ask for it. That would be a totally different story. But yeah, so pictures from across the room and then proceeds to feel me up to try to make it better.
Creepy. And because she's drunk, I'm assuming she never got the point.
No, she didn't. She didn't get it at all.
She probably saw her pictures the next day and was like, oh man, who's this Jack chick I was taking pictures of?
Right, yeah. Right.
there's a lot of, you know, there's always like my favorite thing is when people will be like walking and one will say to the other, like, hey, look at that girl. And then they both look at you.
Yeah.
And like you can tell. So one of my favorite, this is right or wrong, this is one of my favorite things to do now. And Ryan just gets a really big kick out of it. So when that happens, I'll like just stare directly at those people and make like a really big smiling face.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they get so creeped out, but it's funny to me. Yeah. Yeah. But there's, you know, people are keyboard warriors for the most part when it comes to making comments about, you know, what I look like or what I do with my body. But, you know, in person, if people really get, you know, if they've had a beer or two or they don't know me and they just think that they can say whatever. I did have a man in the gym. We lived in Des Moines for a while, about a year and a half ago. A man that I didn't know come up to me. I mean, I had like my big, like, don't fucking talk to me headphones on.
Yeah.
And he didn't care. He just like, wanted to talk to me anyway. So I took my headphones off and he said a statement to me. And I was like, did he really just say this? I said, excuse me? And he said, why would you want to be stronger than a man in bed? And I was like so taken back by that, because I couldn't believe that somebody would say that to my face.
Yeah, yeah.
Or even like think that in general. But you know, I was like, I was really proud of myself, and I told Ryan, because I do have a little bit of a temper. I just told him, you know,
indeed.
Respectfully said, you know, like, I don't care for your opinion, and walked away, which I was proud of myself. But then I was like, man, I can't believe this person said this to me. So yeah, little, there's been several instances like that, but that's one of the ones I remember definitely.
Yeah. It's so interesting because it's so different that, you know, you go out into normal society and you get this mixed reaction, whereas you go to, you know, a bodybuilding show and you're revered, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why it's kind of weird to us, you know, because all of our crowd is, they're bodybuilders, you know, and like our little getaways are bodybuilding shows sometimes. So you're normal there,
right?
You know? And then when you, like you said, you go out into normal society and then you're ostracized and stared at like a part of a freak show.
Mm-hmm.
Do you tend to maybe think more about what you're going to wear out in public? Like, maybe I don't want to wear a tank top today, even though it is warm. I don't want to get the looks today type thing.
100%.
You did that yesterday.
Yeah. And I was just listening to, I think it was Dr. Scott talked about this, Dr. Scott Stevenson, on something the other day. And I was like, man, I can relate to that because I just unconsciously do it. But yeah, if I like go to the gym and I train, if I have a tank on or whatever, if I have to go to the grocery store, if I have to run errands later, I will purposely, you know, like bring a pair of sweats and a hoodie or something to wear over it, just so when I go to, you know, a public place that I'm not stared at.
Hmm. Ryan, what do you think people's deal is, why they think it's appropriate to say shit like this? Like, especially the, you know, the negative stuff, the why would you want to be stronger than a man in bed? What do you think is going through someone's head that makes them think like that's an okay thing to do?
Man, I don't know, but
yeah,
they must, it's gotta be like an inferior complex or something, you know? I don't know, either they're jealous or just something they've never seen before and they're not used to it.
Yeah.
You know, they're used to the idea of beauty being this little Victoria's Secret model or something, you know, and that might be their cup of tea, but it's not necessarily everybody else's cup of tea. And I don't know, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I feel like in society, at least maybe it's that we're used to fat people, but like you don't go up to somebody who's extremely obese and start talking to them about the way they look, you know?
Absolutely.
Like it's just not something you want to do.
Right. Not in a negative way anyways, you know, maybe to try to help.
Right. But even then, like if you walk up to a fat lady at McDonald's and try to tell her how you can help her get in shape,
I'd get called a bitch. You're right.
Yeah, it's so weird. So you guys train together. You guys work out together every workout then, every day, or how's that work out?
Well, actually, Ryan just started fortitude training. Ooh. So, yeah, he's changing some things up, and I'm sticking with what's working for me. So we do go to the gym at the same time, and a lot of times, you know, we spot each other, whatever. But every once in a while, we'll do some sets together, but not normally.
And so you guys are both going to probably start your diets at about the same time, it sounds like, if you're both competing in spring.
We have a family vacation to Hawaii.
Ooh.
And at the end of November. And then after that, I'm planning to really, really get after it. And then Ryan will have to be kind of suffering on vacation.
Yeah, they have nice fish and stuff in Hawaii. You can make it work, you know.
Yeah.
Oh man, not my idea of a vacation, but I hear you. I've been there, you know, enough times, no question about it. So
yeah.
At this point, I don't think I really have too much else for you guys. I just I wanted to get a chance to bring you on though, and say hi, and just kind of introduce you to everybody though, because I really like hanging out with you guys. You're fun people, and I knew that you'd be a great fit. Plus, Haley, I know that you know this was something that we just talked to. You know, Victoria Felkar not too long ago about identity and social stuff related to muscle. I thought that this would be kind of like a fun little follow-up to bring you on and have you talk a little bit about that too.
Yeah, I do. I have one more. I remembered one that I did want to bring up.
Oh, yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah, please do. Yeah. Please do.
So I'm a trainer. I used to be a high school English teacher. And I kind of transitioned out of that when I really started following bodybuilding. And now I run my own training business. And one thing I did notice about me acquiring so much more muscle is potential clients are sometimes, you know, scared away very easily by the way that I look, because they think that, you know, the way that I train them, they'll end up like me.
Oh, just accidentally, miraculously wake up, right, Ryan?
Right.
So what I get this a lot, and it's ignorance on their part, but also, you know, it's my responsibility to tell them, you know, like, this is not an accident. Like, you're not just going to fall into a puddle and become a professional bodybuilder. That's not how it works. They say, well, I don't, no offense, but I don't want to look like you. Hmm. And it used to like really offend me. But now I'm just, you know, I tell, depending on my mood, I say, you know, well, you won't, you know, you don't have the capability, or, you know, that's not how I'm going to train you. That's not how it works. You know, this is your body. But that happens a lot. And that's the typical thing that women will say, in a negative connotation. But then again, there are some chicks that are like, I want to look like you. Let's do it.
That's cool.
So, yeah.
Well, that's cool. You're empowering a lot of people, and I think that's awesome. Guys, anything else that we should mention before we get out of here? I mean, I want to hear all about the, you know, what you're doing with the MPC News, but let me know if I'm missing something else here.
We do have that transformation challenge that we're going to be doing here.
Yeah. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I'm going to be prepping for the Arnold Classic Amateur, and so we decided to do something fun with that. We're going to do a 16-week kind of like a prep along with me transformation. Well, and long story short, the winner with the best transformation will win 3-day tickets to the Arnold Expo.
Nice.
And the winner will also get a photo shoot with HD Physiques.
Hell yeah.
And a meet and greet with Scott McNally.
Hey, if you want it, if you win and you don't want that, I don't blame you.
They're doing it, dang it.
Yeah, so that's what we got going on. If you're interested in that, you can go to trainedbyhd.com, and there's a little pop-up, and you can click on there and fill out an entry form. Other than that, yeah, just training in the gym.
Right on. What's HD Physiques?
So that's the modeling company that I do a lot of work for.
Okay.
The one that does the contracting for NPC News Online and, you know, lots of muscle shoots, stuff like that.
Nice. So they have you go around to the shows and you guys do interviews with the winners and such.
Yeah.
That's pretty badass. If they want to follow along with any of that stuff, where can they go?
Yeah, so that most of that is posted on NPC News Online.
Okay.
Or NPC News on Instagram posts a lot of that stuff too.
That's where I've been following along. It seems like a lot of the media has really gone to Instagram, doesn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It's so easy.
It is. And if I want to follow a show, it's like, boom, I look at my phone, I see who the top five was in, you know, each class, each division.
Right. I was just doing that for USA's. Like, I think Maximum Muscle Report was there, and I turned on my post notifications, so every time like a class would finish, I would just get I would look and I could see who won, and I didn't really have to follow along. I could just kind of see, you know, every time the trophies were awarded, so it was cool.
Absolutely. So you were in the, you know, one teens for your last show. What do you guess you're going to be this next year?
Beej is guessing I'll be probably around 138, 140.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's big. That's really big.
It's a pretty big jump.
And
I'm happy though. I'm really happy with it. I'm actually pretty mystified by what we've been able to do this year, but it's crazy what happens, you know, when you stay consistent and take the off season, you know, even more seriously than contest prep.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like you said, it's been your first off season, real off season too. So that's cool. What's your Instagram handles, and let me know if there's anywhere else that people should look out for you.
Oh yeah, I'm HDFit_IFBB Pro on Instagram. And Ryan.
I am the underscore tyrant underscore killer on Instagram. The tyrant killer.
Harkening back to your fighting days, I assume.
It is. That was my nickname.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm glad I never crossed paths with you in a bad way, then. That's all I got to say.
I'm friendly.
No, you're a great guy. You guys are a great couple.
I think it might be harder to be the wife of a fighter than the husband of a bodybuilder.
Yeah, that sounds like an interesting show in itself right there.
It's rough watching your husband potentially. I mean, when they get in the octagon, like, they could potentially die. It tests your nerves for sure.
Yeah, I could see that. So you must be glad he's not fighting now.
I mean, yes and no, because I love it. I love MMA. I think it's fantastic. It's some of the best training I've ever done. Ryan's helped me with some Muay Thai and Jiu-Jitsu. It's great cardio. But I am happy because it's rough watching him cut weight that way. It's a lot different than bodybuilding. It's hard, but I wouldn't be opposed to him doing it again. I just know that I would have to mentally prepare myself for it.
Hey, Ryan, which is harder, cutting weight for bodybuilding or for fighting?
Well, I got to say, I wish I knew how to diet correctly when I was wrestling and fighting. That would have helped a lot, because basically I would be almost anorexic. You know, I just did it I cut weight the wrong way when I was fighting. If I would have known how to diet the right way, maybe I would have had more energy and even looked better, you know?
It seems like a lot of fighters are like that. They just don't have the same, you know, education level that bodybuilders do.
Exactly. Sure. Absolutely. So I would say, just because I didn't have the knowledge, cutting for fighting was more difficult.
Fair enough.
But yeah.
All right, guys. Well, let's get out of here for another episode of Advices Radio. IFBB Pro, Haley Delph, and Rylan Delph. I'm Scott McNally. We will see you soon. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Advices Radio Network.